Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com. Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Barack Obama set big goals for his presidency on Iraq and Afghanistan, on healthcare reform and global warming, and more. 9 months in, his scorecard is in the spotlight. Critics on the right and left are charging that he's done little so far. All talk, no action. More hope than change. Is that fair? This hour, On Point, the president's scorecard. We'll ask what's done, what's not, and what the checklist tells us. You can join the conversation. Is the president making the grade for you on Guantanamo, Afghanistan, healthcare, climate change, right on down? Are critics too quick to complain? Is Obama too slow to act? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. With us today from Los Angeles, Arianna Huffington, co-founder and editor-in-chief of the Huffington Post. Arianna Huffington, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much. Good to be with you, Tom.
From Washington, Byron York joins us, chief political correspondent for the Washington Examiner. Hello, Byron. Welcome back.
Hi, Tom. Good to be here.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point news analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly magazine. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Arianna, and Byron.
Arianna Huffington, first to you. You've been pretty tough with the progressive critique of the president lately. The movement is deeply disillusioned, you told George Stephanopoulos on Sunday. Why?
Well, Tom, I don't see it as just a progressive critique. I look at the two major problems that the president was faced with when he took office, the domestic economic crisis and the war in Afghanistan that was beginning to unravel. And on both these major issues, by which ultimately he's going to be judged, he has not really performed in the best interest of the American public. This is not in the best interest of the movement or in the best interest of the progressives. That is irrelevant. This is not about right versus left. This is about looking at what has happened to the real economy and seeing that unemployment is getting close to double digits. About 300,000 foreclosure notices go out every month, and millions more are expected to have their homes foreclosed. Credit card defaults are soaring. And even the people who have jobs, as we have the top story on the Huffington Post today and from the New York Times today, are in fact seeing their pay slashed and the hours that they're working lessened. And what do we have today? Massive new profits by J.P. Morgan. I'm sure it will be the same tomorrow with Goldman Sachs. So there's a real imbalance here in terms of what this administration did to bail out Wall Street without any strings attached and what has happened to the real economy. And just very quickly on Afghanistan, to actually be in the position now where the president is contemplating whether to add another 40,000 troops, as General McChrystal wants, or 20,000 troops as a compromise would be, is really not where the country needs to be in terms of what is best for its national security interests.
Not enough on either front. Byron York, you've got a conservative tack here. Arianna says her view isn't progressive. On the other hand, conservatives may be celebrating that Barack Obama has done more. That was Saturday Night Live's joke, you know. Don't, where they say I'm making the country socialist, forget about it. I'm not doing anything, the comedian said there. What's your conservative perspective on the president's checklist so far, Byron?
Well, certainly not celebrating, but I think, you know, I think what we've seen is the emergence of this critique on the left from people who perhaps had expectations that were too high of the president or of the system. And so you are, you know, 9 months into it, and still there has been no health care bill passed. Guantanamo is still open and will most certainly remain open past the president's deadline.
There's January, he promised, a year from his inauguration day.
There has not been sweeping environmental regulation. And so some of the things that were high on the agenda simply haven't happened. And in my view, first of all, this is all coming from the left, from people who want him to do these things. Of those three things I mentioned, I don't want him to do any of them. So I'm not unhappy with him on that score. But I think that perhaps people maybe misunderestimated how long it takes to get these things done. The healthcare debate is huge. It will have vast, far-reaching consequences, and the idea that it could be pushed through the House and Senate very, very quickly just was unrealistic. By the way, a healthcare bill or a cap-and-trade bill would have been a big legislative accomplishment for 1 year. Trying to do them both was probably not realistic. So I think the president came into office with people had unrealistically high expectations of him, and now you're just seeing them crash a little bit.
You say the complaint is all from the left, but then we hear the all-talk, weak president charge from the right. Jack, I want to come to you, but let's listen to that skit, Saturday Night Live. Here's the kind of list they went down, the checklist of the president saying, don't worry, I'm not doing anything. It was the opening skit on October 3rd, cast member Fred Armisen as the do-nothing President Obama.
On my first day in office, I said I'd close Guantanamo Bay. Is it closed yet? No. I said we'd be out of Iraq. Are we? Not the last time I checked. I said I'd make improvements in the war in Afghanistan. Is it better? No, I think it's actually worse. How about healthcare reform? Hell no.
And on it went, complete with laughter, but I'm not sure exactly who's laughing. Jack Beatty, do-nothing president, is that fair?
I don't think it's fair. Consider the comparison. What we think of as the New Deal, the major institutional changes that constitute the New Deal, came later than the first year. Securities and Exchange Commission, 1934. Social Security and the Wagner Act, 1935. In 1933, the famous 100 days, the 15 bills signed in 100 days, of them, two were found unconstitutional by the Supreme Court. One, the Banking Act, was sent to Congress on the day of the president's inauguration. They debated it for 38 minutes. There was no printed copy. It was represented by a folded newspaper symbolically, and it passed that day. You can't compare then to now. And then when you look at how Ariana is right, the president has, I don't think, adequately dealt with the problem of the economy and this economic crisis, but neither did Franklin Roosevelt. The Depression lasted and lingered and went on. Presidents do what they can. And I think if you look historically at the president's stimulus bill, it measures up to anything any other president has done. Certainly, anything Franklin Roosevelt did in his first year. He actually tried to balance the budget, and not only does it deal with short term matters, there's billions in there of long term investment in green energy. So I think he's done what he could on the economy. Afghanistan, I agree with Ariana. That's just a disaster, and I'm afraid he is going to split the difference there and just go with some fudge of 20,000 troops. But I do think it's unfair. And as of 2:52 yesterday afternoon, the idea that he's a do-nothing president when he stands on the point, really, of getting healthcare reform, every progressive candidate since Teddy Roosevelt in 1912 has tried it. He's that much closer now.
Ariana Huffington, how about it? Too soon to throw down the big critique, and he's got a big one maybe coming in healthcare reform.
Well, first of all, let's start with Jack's comparison to FDR, because that's very telling. If you look at what FDR did with Social Security, when a Democrat, a conservative Democrat from within his own party, Senator Bennett Clark from Missouri, introduced an amendment to weaken the bill, the way it's been done with the healthcare bill again and again. In the Social Security case, it was by allowing employers to opt out of the program. FDR realized that this would essentially gut the bill, which was, of course, Senator Clark's purpose, and vowed to veto any measure containing the amendment. So basically, he took on his own party the way President Obama has not done on health care. And the Social Security that we all celebrate now would not have been the Social Security that was passed if he had just split the difference, gone along with Senator Clark, accepted no portability and the ability to opt out the program. It would have destroyed the program. That's really what those of us who are arguing in favor of a public option in order to provide real competition with the healthcare industry, and we're seeing how the healthcare industry has been behaving in the last few days, want that
with them
because
pushing
we want
warnings saying that premium is going to go through the roof. Watch out, watch out.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So we are saying that because we want real reform. You know, I think we are all tired of pretend reform. Do you remember how we all, Democrats and Republicans, not I, I must say, celebrated the education reform, No Child Left Behind? What has happened to that? Nothing. Education is in a worse state than it has been for a very long time, and yet education reform is not even on the agenda because the Washington establishment is acting as though we did education. So now I'm sure there will be some form of healthcare reform. We'll split the difference. We'll keep Olympia Snow happy. And then what's going to happen? Nothing. No fundamental real reform, except all that political capital will have been wasted. And how long will it be before we really tackle healthcare reform again?
So are you saying Obama was the wrong guy for you? That's a pretty big early in an administration judgment. If splitting the difference
isn't leadership,
which you said recently, and you're saying that's what he's doing.
What I'm saying is that, as Jack also said about FDR, there is plenty of time to course correct. So I and many others are issuing these evaluations of where we are, not because we feel, okay, that's the end of the Obama presidency. Clearly, this is not even a one-year-old presidency. There's plenty, plenty of time to lead. But he has not been leading. That's what I'm saying.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about the president's scorecard, 9 months in. What's done? What's not? And what we make of it with Arianna Huffington, editor-in-chief of the Huffington Post. Byron York of the Washington Examiner is here, and Jack Beatty. The president has been getting it from all sides lately. A little bit more of Saturday Night Live, October 3rd. Fred Armisen here laying it down as the president.
I just don't see why the right is so riled up. I mean, how do you think the left feels? They're the ones that should be mad. I'm sure they thought I would have addressed at least one of the following things by now. Global warming. Nope. Immigration reform. Nope. Gays in the military. Nuh-uh. Limits on executive powers. Nope. Torture prosecutions. Nope. So looking at this list, I'm seeing two big accomplishments. Jack and squat.
Okay, that's rough stuff. On The Daily Show, Jon Stewart piled on, saying it's time to get the president for the president to get things done.
I know that you have a lot on your desk plate. But as a thin man who smokes, you may not understand the concept. All that stuff you've been putting on your plate, it's chow time, brother. That's how you get things off of your plate.
Jack and squat and chow time and hear from the right. Keep America Safe, a right-wing foreign policy group headed by Liz Cheney, accuses the president of slacking off in Afghanistan. Here's their new web video released yesterday with commentary from Fox News contributor Charles Krauthammer.
Barack Obama knows how to give a great speech. But when it comes to America's defense, the rhetoric doesn't match the reality. He talked tough on Afghanistan.
I argued for more resources and more troops to finish the fight against the terrorists who actually attacked us on 9/11.
The reality.
He hasn't reached a conclusion, I suppose, because he's spending all his time preparing for Letterman and speeches, but to school children that he hasn't been able to focus on a war in which our soldiers are in the field getting shot at.
Not enough time for decision, but plenty of time for Letterman, golf, a beer summit, more golf, vacation, and a visit to Copenhagen.
Jack and squat, golf, and Copenhagen. There's Liz Cheney's group on President Obama from the right, and big critique of the scorecard. Jack, there it is from both sides. I mean, just in a nutshell, this guy was dealt a very, very tough hand, but it's 9 months in. People are impatient. There's the splitting the difference dynamic that you've commented on coming out of the Obama White House, and just a whole lot of angst in this country about the pace of things, about decisions.
You know, there's no question about it. But again, let's just look at the record. For the first time ever, a House of Congress has passed a climate change bill. I mean, that's epical.
Just the House, not the Senate. The Senate on the way. Barbara Boxer says it may be done by December in Copenhagen, too.
Think of that. I mean, and, you know, this is and just put the clock back to the Bush administration, where they had former officials from ExxonMobil changing the editing of documents relating to global warming, and now with the president's leadership, that is moving forward. Now, is it the best bill in the world? I don't think so. But Al Gore praises it, and that's good enough for me. You know, these things can't be done easily. They can't be done rapidly, and they're all done under the blanket, the canopy of a money-dominated political system. My view, the president should have begun with campaign finance reform. Basically, I think that would have been a much better way to go. We're going to clean out the stables, we're going to have public funding of campaigns, and we're going to pass bills based on the public interest, not on investors. That's not what he's doing. He's playing it in the system we have. And that system works slowly, and it doesn't produce, I agree with Arianna, it doesn't produce bills that are optimal for the public interest, some of the public interest, but that's the system the president is working in.
Byron York, the all-talk critique comes from the right as well, but, you know, the charge was socialism. Saturday Night Live had fun with that, so what are you talking about? I'm not doing anything. Why are you shouting socialism?
Well, look, there's a lot of things in the pipeline that if they were actually passed, conservatives would be very unhappy with. But, you know, listening to Arianna's critique, which is kind of the classic progressive critique of Obama at this point, you get the sense that it leaves out one pretty important factor, which is where the public is on some of these things. Clearly, the polls show that the public is deeply concerned about health care. Pluralities do not approve of the way the president's handling it, although there are polls that show that some of them approve of various components.
And that a lot of people want something done, see a crisis.
But the critique is basically, we progressives know what's best for you, and we need to get this done, the public be damned. And I just don't think that is the way Congress is working. Two or three key numbers here. There are 256 and 60, which are the numbers of Democrats in the House and the Senate. But in the House, I believe there are 49 Democrats from districts won by John McCain last November. So the public is not really completely on board about this. They have deep reservations. And the idea that that is acting as a brake on Congress, I think, is a very good thing. And to the degree that progressives are frustrated about it, it's that they don't like where the public is right now.
Let's hear from the public on the president right now. Northborough, Massachusetts. Bill, you're on the air with Arianna Huffington, Byron York, Jack Beatty.
I think that Arianna and Saturday Night Live are pretty much on the mark. I voted for the president, and I've been disappointed almost from day one. I mean, taking Guantanamo, he promised transparency. Well, not only do we not have transparency, we also don't have accountability. This business about let's look forward, not looking back. If he gets the health care going through, what's going to happen is it's not going to have a public option, and when it doesn't, inevitably, that bill is going to fail. And when it fails, all the Republicans and the conservatives are going to be crowing about, see, we told you so. I don't see any fight in this president. And by the way, I'm going to extend this criticism to the Democratic Party as a whole. I don't see fight in the party either. I just can't believe how spineless they've been.
Bill, we've got the perspective. Let me hold it right there. I'll take it to Arianna. One more from Tennessee, Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Dennis, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I just want to say something in defense of President Obama. I mean, it's only been 9 months since he became president.
Yep.
And, I mean, do people expect a magic act here? Do they expect things to just happen overnight? Let's get real. It took President Bush 8 years to screw this country up as bad as it is now. And it's going to take a long time to fix it. We need to be patient, we need to be understanding, we need to give the president a chance. Now, the president's initiated a lot of things. He's worked hard. He's worked harder than I've seen a president work in the first 9 months of office, in my 52 years of life.
So give the man a chance. It's only 9 months. Ariana, you hear our first caller saying no fight in this president. He doesn't think a health bill is going to pass in any case. Where are you on that? Do you think that there will be a big health reform here? Maybe not big enough for you, but big enough for the president to have bragging rights, Ariana?
Yes, I think there will be a health care bill that will do exactly what you're saying, give the president and Congress bragging rights. My concern is that Jack identified the problem, which is that the president is still trying to bring about fundamental reform within a broken system driven by lobbyists and campaign contributions. Mm. And he knew, and he said again and again during the campaign, that was why he was going to Washington. I think we should do that at the Huffington Post. That gave me an idea. We should put down all the quotes from the campaign, from the president, from the first lady, about how the system is broken. Barack Obama is not going to Washington to operate within a broken mm-hmm. system. Mm-hmm. That's why it's good that he's only been in Washington for 2 years. Remember, mm. that was his response to the criticism that he's only been there for 2 years. And that was a good thing. And there is an urgency to the need to reform. There was an urgency. I just happened to read an old interview in Vanity Fair with the First Lady, and she was going on and on about the urgency. This cannot wait because people are suffering, the system is broken, we must take on the special interests. And that has not happened. And Jack is absolutely right. If that doesn't happen, nothing will fundamentally change. Just this week, Congress surrendered to something so basic, and please let's stop looking at it as a left-right thing, but not allowing corporations to benefit from tax havens, to basically screw the taxpayer by taking benefits of these tax havens, which are
overseas.
Completely
mm-hmm.
overseas. Yes. I mean, I don't think that there is anybody who cares about this country who is against the change that Congress wanted to bring about, but it didn't happen. It failed. Why? Because they're so well funded. The revolving door of all these highly connected lobbyists who used to be former chiefs of staff
yep.
or former staffers in Congress, and they know what to do. And that's really the fundamental problem. And just one last thing. You know, if we keep seeing it as right versus left, we're just completely missing the point. I mean, Byron, I'm sorry. It's not true that the majority of people don't want health care reform. What you said is the majority of people are not happy with the way the president is handling it. Well, that includes me. The majority of people are not only in favor of fundamental health care reform, they're in favor of the public option. And the same applies to Afghanistan. How can you keep, not you specifically, Byron, just generally, how can the media keep looking at what's happening in Afghanistan as a right versus left issue when you have major conservatives, including George Will, saying that it is in the national interest to leave Afghanistan, that this is not a necessary war, this is a war of choice. I mean, Richard Haass, who heads the Council of Foreign Relations. So I think we in the media have a responsibility to just stop using this lazy division of right versus left because it blocks our understanding of what is happening.
Byron, what about it? And do you see kind of eagerness for nothing to happen under this presidency from where you sit? And I'm sorry to say it, Ariana, but in conservative quarters, the Waterloo on health care as the goal. And so, I mean, we've got big problems in this country. Is not moving an option?
I'm sitting in an NPR studio now, so I'm not exactly
yes, sir.
In conservative quarters at the moment.
Okay.
But, you know, I think that the Ariana's talk about this sense of urgency, I think, is another problem with this approach, which is that when something is truly, truly urgent, got to do something now, it does get done fairly quickly. I didn't think the $787 billion stimulus was a good idea, but it got done pretty fast because there was a real sense of urgency. The president tried to sort of gin up a sense of urgency to get both houses of Congress to pass health care reforms before the August recess, and it didn't work because there wasn't that sense of urgency. Even if people do want the system fixed, and we should point out that more than 80% of people do have health insurance and they're relatively satisfied with it, which is why they're uneasy about seeing major changes in it. But
everybody knows what those premiums are and what the security of that health care coverage can be. No wonder they're uneasy.
And they're not convinced that this would be better. They're not convinced that you can take $450 billion out of Medicare and not change the services provided to people and other reasons. But the administration has been peddling this false sense of urgency. And you have to just step back for a moment and say, wait a minute. No, that's not true. We can take time to do this. And the urgency, as far as the administration is concerned, is because there are 256 Democrats in the House and 60 in the Senate, and they feel probably correctly that they're never going to have a better deal than that. And it's extremely frustrating to Democrats that they cannot get these things done with those overwhelming majorities in House and Senate. But the problem is they're pushing too far.
Jack Beatty, a false sense of urgency in this country? I don't know about that.
I don't either. I mean, I think the people really want something done about the economy. And that there I would fault the administration. I mean,
I would agree they do want something done about the economy. I was talking about health care reform,
right,
creating
a sense
of urgency.
I think there's ambivalence there for the reasons you said. And partly that's a response to, you know, the critique of the whole idea of health care reform. But I do think there's tremendous anxiety about the economy. And, you know, I was looking at a chart recently of the deficit, and there's a small sliver in there that represents Obama. The big sliver is the recession itself, obviously, and then a second big chunk is the Bush tax cuts. And yet the president can't really people are neuralgic about the idea of another stimulus, which it seems to me we obviously need. And I'm really somewhat regretting that the summer wasn't spent debating another stimulus and putting health care even over into next year, because just on the political basis, the Democratic Party is not going to flourish, to put it mildly, in 2010. With the projected unemployment we're going to see there, and so just from their own self interest, it would have been smarter. It also would have answered the public's fears. What the public really wants something done about right now. And instead, and I think Byron is right, because they realized, you know, a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. They were going to get their bill, their reforms for the long term, and meanwhile, the short term recovery has sort of been left to look after itself. Although I don't think $780 billion is doing something about recovery. It's just not doing enough.
It's not,
Tom,
that's,
can I just
we're not
jump
out of
in.
The woods. Yeah, Byron?
With one thing. Jack is actually right on this. The president came into office with an overwhelming sense of urgency and an overwhelming mandate to do something about the economy. There's just no doubt about it. I don't think some of the things he did were right, but clearly everybody wanted him to do something about that. The problem hit from the president's point of view is that afterwards he tried to pivot and to redefine recovery to include, amazingly enough, major elements of his 2008 campaign platform. So he began to argue that we cannot have true economic recovery without having health care reform or without having a cap and trade system. So he tried to change the pitch to the American people, and it simply didn't work because that sense of urgency on those issues wasn't there.
Arianna Huffington, is there a moment missed here in these 9 months, or is the opportunity still sitting there for President Obama by your lights?
Absolutely, the opportunity is still sitting there. But I think it's going to require a change of team. I don't think the president will do what needs to be done with the economy while Larry Summers is running the show. The problem with Larry Summers is that he has been wrong consistently. He was wrong during the Clinton years when, after all, he was one of the main architects of the Glass-Steagall reform and abandonment that ended up being one of the main causes of the economic meltdown. So, unfortunately, at the moment, economic policy at the White House and therefore in Congress is being run by a man whose priority is what's good for Wall Street. That's the way he sees the world. That's his cosmogony, if you want. And if the president wants to have a fundamental change in that, he will need to bring in some new people. I mean, there is an American heroine right there, Elizabeth Warren, who is the chair of the
Congressional Oversight Panel.
Exactly. And it's not just that she's been doing a great job with that. She's been doing a great job explaining to the American people what's happening.
We heard from her just last week. And yet, there's a sense that maybe not enough action, not quick enough. Arianna Huffington, Byron York, Jack Beatty, please stand by. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This hour, we're talking about the president's scorecard 9 months in with Arianna Huffington of the Huffington Post, Byron York of the Washington Examiner, and Jack Beatty. After the Senate Finance Committee gave a green light to health care reform yesterday, the president in the Rose Garden was talking action.
Now's not the time to pat ourselves on the back. Now's not the time to offer ourselves congratulations. Now's the time to dig in and work even harder to get this done.
Get this done. Rick in Essex, Vermont, you're on the air, Rick.
Hi. Lifelong moderate Republican who voted for Obama, okay, because I'm just tired of the last 16 years of extreme left and right. Mm-hmm. And what is happening here now in Congress is more of the same, the left and the right. And I think the comment made that the money flowing in is a huge impediment to getting anything done. The French, the South Koreans, the Danes, the Germans all have wonderful systems and pay on average 4.5 to 5% of the overhead of the private insurance companies, which I think is the way to stick with the private insurance companies. But there are 100 private insurance companies in France competing. Their overhead is around, 4.5, 5%, and it's 16% in this country.
On health care coverage, but what about the president? Is he doing as well as can be done or not in this situation, Rick?
I think he's doing as well as can be done, given the fact that he's got 16 years of junk to undo, and a Congress that is like a bunch of kids in a sandbox with the left and the right battling each other to get nothing done. And I think, you know, it's so many of us are fed up. I have not heard a single person say to me anywhere, whether it's in Tennessee where I visit or here, that they don't want to see health care reform. I have not heard one person say, I don't want health care reform.
There's the finger pointing at Congress, not the president, from Rick. Let's get Julia in West Des Moines, Iowa. Julia, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I'm going to agree with the previous caller that Congress is a real stumbling block to change and how it works, and the lobbying system is a real problem. But I also think that on the positive side that Obama has appointed people who are doing quietly some good things, Hillary at State, Jackson at EPA, Salazar in Interior, and I feel like we've stopped going down a really bad place in this country, and our perception as a world leader has come back rather than as a bullying, self-interested country. And so, yes, I'd like more, but I don't think you can blame Obama for not fulfilling promises at this point, but I think, you know, there's to be said on lots of different ways.
There's patience in Des Moines. And, Julia, thank you. One more from Auburn, Alabama. Janet, you're on the air.
I'm very much in agreement with the previous caller. Be patient. Enjoy the vision, the challenge, and remember the words of John Kennedy to ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. We're 59. We grew up in that time where it's up to us. And he's a great leader, and I'm all for him, so keep going.
Janet, thanks. Arianna Huffington, there's a view from Alabama. Be patient. Enjoy the vision, the challenge. There's a lot of American patience and warm feeling right there.
Yes, absolutely. Depends on where you are and who you are in touch with. We just launched a new section on the Huffington Post yesterday called Impact, where we are gathering stories of people around the country and are asking our community to help. And the response to our first lead story of a family that couldn't get health care, where the mother had to go blind to be able to allow her children to see. And, you know, we raised almost $20,000 for them in one day.
Hard to be patient when you're going blind.
Yes, it just shows that there are a lot of people here out of work, going hungry, going without health care, being thrown out of their homes, who will have a tough time listening to the message to be patient. And our job is to provide a platform for them to have a voice and also to give back, to help. And that's the other thing, you know, that one of the great things really that happened during the campaign was that Obama tapped into that yearning in the American people to give back. Remember, that was the yearning sort of activated after 9/11 that President Bush did not respond to, that it became, you know, go shopping and we'll take care of everything. Mm. That yearning is still there. And as well as asking the government to do everything it needs to do, we need to tap into those better angels of our nature and see what we can do to come together in this moment of crisis. And that is also essential, because otherwise the worst angels of our nature are dominant, and we've seen that in the town halls, and we've seen that in the anger that's being unleashed in this country. So these are the sort of two forces battling. And the administration, the White House, has the bully pulpit to actually address that as well as addressing all the policy issues.
Mm-hmm. Let's look at some more of this checklist, if we can. Byron York, let me come to you on Guantanamo. The president said on his first day in office it would be closed in a year. Do you think Guantanamo will be closed in January?
Absolutely not. And the White House has pretty much admitted so much. It hasn't formally said so. Here again, this was one of these over high expectations. The White House somehow thought it could solve these problems. And maybe the Bush people were so stupid they hadn't thought of some of the problems that were involved. But the problem is that there's a core group of maybe 50 in Guantanamo that we are never going to let go, and we are never going to try them. And what do you do with those people? You don't bring them to the United States. I am certainly not comfortable with the idea of having prisoners in United States facility in the United States who have not been charged with a crime and are being held indefinitely. That's not
acceptable. But it's okay with you in Guantanamo?
It absolutely is, under military auspices.
U.S. military? I mean,
that's correct. Mm-hmm. So this is a major constitutional problem. And then as far as the others who perhaps can be let go, Obama clearly overestimated his persuasive abilities to get other countries to take these prisoners who had not taken them before. So it was, I think, just a very bad judgment on the president to suggest that he could get this done so quickly.
Jack Beatty, Guantanamo engaged in the military. Guantanamo first. Is he going to be sitting there 1 year after Inauguration Day with Guantanamo still, you know, the bar still up, the prisoners still there?
Yes,
be hard.
It certainly will be still there, and part of it is, you know, a kind of mindless, not in my backyard resistance from Congress. You know, you'd think that that felons are escaping from federal penitentiaries every day to hear some of these Congress. Oh gosh, they're not going to come in my district. And I fault the president for not shaming them. I mean, he has made these comments. But this gets back to something Bill raised earlier, this issue of, does the president have fight in him? Mm. And he hasn't gotten as far as he has in life without having something like fight. But fight with him is within the Obama temperament of calm and serenity and determination. And also fight is inappropriate, I think, as he sees it, on the economic side. This gets to Ariana's point. His strategy is one of business confidence. If he spends his time beating up on Wall Street, mm-hmm. if he spends his time trying to get ahead of the populist parade of, you know, let's go after the people who've wrecked the economy, he's going to depress the stock market. He's going to hurt business confidence. FDR hurt business confidence. In the 1936 campaign at Madison Square Garden, where he said, "I welcome their hatred," talking about the business class, he hurt his own economy for the sake of his reelection. The fact is, we have a capitalist system. It runs on animal spirits, and you can't have a, you know, and the threat of capital strike is always there. And the president, I think that's what Summers is about. I think that's what Geithner's about. That's why Geithner spends half his time on the phone with bankers and won't take calls from Congress.
Ariana, we had a White House advisor saying that the liberal bloggers are, you know, should take off their pajamas and get serious about politics. Maybe there's a, you know, maybe there's a method to all this. That sort of being calm.
You know what Jack said is again key. You know, we don't have a capitalist system at the moment. You know, I studied economics, and I never knew why I studied economics, but now it's coming in handy. And what we have right now is an oligopoly. It's not a capitalist system. It's the government picking winners and losers. I mean, this is not just me saying it. Just just listen to people who are covering Wall Street, who are seeing what's happening.
You mean before the rescue or after?
No, right now. The reason why these banks are making all these profits is because the government has effectively guaranteed them. They have guaranteed that no bank that is too big to fail, and these banks are getting bigger by the day, will be allowed to fail. This is not capitalism. In capitalism, if you fail, you fail. And these are the animal spirits that Jack is celebrating. Right now, basically, we have socialized the losses and privatized the gains. And the people are sensing that. Even if they don't know all the details, they're sensing that we are not operating with a fair system. There is no level playing field. Because if you can't pay your mortgage, you are thrown out of your house. If you fail in Wall Street, if you fail big enough, you are rescued without any strings attached. I mean, even the banks that have returned the TARP money still have multi-billion dollar government guarantees.
Mm-hmm.
And there is absolutely no plan, really, no intention to control all these very risky derivatives. Sure, there is legislation pending, but it's not going to really happen because in the end, these banks will prevail. Just look at one fact. They prevailed when it came to the foreclosure amendment, the cramdown amendment that would have kept hundreds of thousands of families in their homes, and the banks undermined it. And, even the senators were trying to fight very hard to make it pass. We're amazed by the power of these banks that had failed, had been rescued by the taxpayer, but were not even giving in on something as major as foreclosure reform.
But the administration would surely say we had no choice but to step in and rescue this economy. We would have had, this was the very argument of George W. Bush and Obama behind him. We'll have depression if we don't do this. We'll have a collapse.
But it's not about rescuing them or not rescuing them. It's about rescuing and reforming them at the same time or just rescuing them. We rescued them without any strings attached. Remember, if you go back and read what we were told during the bailout, we were told that we have to rescue them in order to start lending again. Well, that hasn't happened. That was really the key problem. Instead of lending again, to small businesses, to families, they basically kept the money to improve their balance sheets.
And we're seeing that today in the headlines of the latest profit reports. Let's get a call from Michigan, West Bloomfield. Jeff, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi.
Your last 5-10 minutes, the woman who was speaking.
Arianna Huffington.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, she's absolutely right. I believe the greed that's driving this country has been proliferated by adding more money to banks that were failing. But now, and believe me, I don't know the answer, but I believe part of that answer is taking the money, the profits that they are taking, and as the woman said before, as Kennedy said, not what you can do, but what you can do for your country. Those people have to be the individuals who bring back the financing and the money that they have made. I'm a charitable person. I wish I could help the world with all that I've got, but I don't have a lot.
Do you think Barack Obama has the fight to do what you want to have done, Jeff?
Yes, because these are the people who have been behind him. They're the ones who made the banks fail to begin with the mortgage. It's where his buddies in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. He now has to say to them, okay, guys, I've got it somewhat under control. The market's doing okay, but now it's time for you to do your part.
We hear it. And Steve in Boston. Thanks, Jeff. Steve in Boston, you're on the air.
Well, it's actually Pete. But
mm-hmm. Hi, Pete.
I was calling because I agree. Look, Obama came into office with his plate full, overflowing. He
yep.
created a lot of these problems. It's going to take a lot of time to resolve these problems. I think he's doing a fine job. I also want to say I'm not a Republican or Democrat. I didn't vote for Obama, but it's going to take time. And secondly, one of your guests talked about 80% of Americans have health care and they're happy. Many of those people who are happy, they're happy because their employer and the employer is paying part of it. But let those people lose their job or go into retirement and still have a family support, and all of a sudden they'd be saying, well, why don't the government do something? So, yeah, they're happy until something goes wrong. To me, now is the time, and we should stop this, left-right fighting against each other. People need something done, and we need to get it done now. So I think the president is doing the best he can, especially when you have a Senate and a Congress who are standing in the way.
A Democratic Senate, a Democratic House of Representatives.
We're not a dictatorship, where you can will something and then it gets done. You know, we have a system that works the way it is, and we have to let it work its way out. And that's all I wanted to say.
Pete, I appreciate your call. Byron York, what about the president's positioning for the path ahead here? Jack Beatty's looking and not so sure it's working for the Democrats in the midterms next year. On the other hand, you know, the president, he hasn't gone hammer and tongs after Republicans. If people are calling for fight, he hasn't just been a slugger out there. Is he building any kind of openness to bipartisan work on the problems we're facing here, or is it all going to be right-left party politics next year?
Well, if it's partisan now, it's going to be more partisan next year. Every single member of the House of Representatives is up for re-election, and a third of the Senate is too. So it's going to be more partisan. The president actually has more time to 2012. You know, I think what the caller said about insurance is actually correct. And when you talk to people about their worries about the health insurance situation, there really aren't that many. They're worried that if they lose their job, they will lose their insurance, and that they're worried if they have a pre-existing condition, they won't get it, and they're worried that it costs too much. And there are ways to try to make this system better, to improve that, and to make insurance more portable without these enormous changes that Democrats are proposing. You know, the Baucus bill is really the farthest to the right, if you will, of all the proposals that are out there. And some of them are just radical remakes of a system for problems that could probably be fixed with less radical solutions.
Well, I'm glad you're relaxed about it, but I see an awful lot of polls where people are not, to Pete's point, lose your job and you're in trouble. Ariane, if you could say a couple of words to the president about the posture or attitude or approach, what would it be 9 months in?
Well, you know what? I've said all the things I don't agree with. Let me say something that I think has been really good about this president. And this is the fact that he has really demonstrated that you can go ahead and not hold grudges, bring in Hillary Clinton, be a great family man, and bring in the grandmother in the White House. So on the cultural front, he's been doing a lot of good things.
Jack, will that get it done? Grandma in the White House?
Amen.
Well, yeah.
Keep those kids happy. That's the important thing.
Yeah. Ariana exactly. Left out Bo the dog.
Yeah, Bo the dog.
I'm
left
sorry,
out.
The dog.
Well, happy home
and,
fires
and
there.
And the garden.
Yeah, and the garden, yes, all nice things. But it's a big country with a lot of appetites for things to happen. Ariana Huffington, it's always great to have you. Thank you very much for being with us today. And Byron York at the Washington Examiner. Byron, wonderful to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Jack Beatty, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Tom.
This is On Point.